podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey everybody, welcome to Coach Unplugged. So thank you so much for joining us today. We would love if you'd leave a review down below. Those five-star reviews really do help us a lot. But before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. Can't say enough great things about the people up in oh gosh, where are they? I know it's a suburb of Minneapolis. I'm going to have to look that up before the next podcast. But great customer service, so easy to set up and break down. It is, we own three of them. That's probably I've had a lot of people come and try to sponsor this podcast, but I only do sponsors that I truly believe in. I believe in Dr. Dish. I also believe in teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It is my baby. It is what allows all these podcasts to go out and stay free and to all of you. So, several ways you can help us out. By leaving a review, but also by checking out teachhoops.com. Right now we have a quarterly, three-month subscription that will, not be around forever, but we're trying some new things out. So come over and check it out and have a great day. I can tell you Coach Showalter's been, he was in Iowa as one of the world-renowned coaches for high school and youth level. I'm sure he didn't come to him like that. It took time. It took resources. And that's why I started teachhoops.com, because I have been where you have been, struggling with practice plans, struggling with the pressure, struggling with what to do, looking for a mentor. Well, teachhoops.com is that mentor you're looking for. Come over and join us, 14-day free trial when it lasts, and let's head off to the podcast.
This is going to be a great one. You're gonna want to get a pencil and paper out. We're talking with Don Showalter today, the national director for the coach development at USA Basketball. He's won who knows how many gold medals with the U16, U17 teams, and it's going to be a great one. So go over and check it out. I guarantee you're not going to be disappointed with the things that you're going to learn over the next, hour or so. And here's Don.
All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged. Today, I couldn't sleep last night. I'm so excited. We have Don Showalter on. Just Google it, is what I'm telling you. Don is a Hall of Fame coach, my guess is over 40 years in Iowa. It's the director of coach development, USA Basketball. I have followed Don from afar. So I figured I would reach out to try to get him on Coach Unplugged, and I got a great response. So I'm so excited. Welcome, Don Showalter.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast, and it's a great opportunity for me to be with you and talk basketball, which I love to do.
Oh, I love to do it too. So why don't you give us a little bit? You have a great career for someone that's coached 30 years in high school basketball. Why don't you go through your basketball journey for the listeners a little bit?
Yeah, right out of I went to a Division III college in Iowa, Warburg College, and I think too many players nowadays think that they can't go Division I, or it's not worth, they don't want to. They want to put in the time and effort. But I had a great experience in Division III. Loved every minute of it. Played for a Hall of Fame coach at Warburg College. Right after graduation, I took a head job at a very, very small high school in Iowa. And at that, we always think we know everything coming out of college, and there's going to be things where you take a job and you're going to turn that job around immediately, because you know everything. You just played college basketball, and it's not quite as easy as that. And I think my path, my path started out being a Division I head coach basketball, and I wanted that was the path I wanted to take. But the longer I was in high school, I think my goals changed a little bit. Family was important to me. So as I longer I was in high school, the more I really enjoyed it. And tell you the truth, a lot of my buddies went to college route, and now they're selling insurance, which I did not want to do.
Going back to what you were saying, first of all, I played Division III. I think kids get too caught up in the numbers sometimes. Some of my best friends are some of my college teammates and roommates, and the journey sounds so familiar in the sense that, you know, that was my goal too, and I had some opportunities, but I think the game is pure. It's at the high school level. It's kids growing up playing together as all the way through elementary, middle school, high school. You know, I tell my boys all the time, it's the only time in your life that you're going to be playing with your friends. Kids in college, they're going to become your friends, but you didn't grow up with them, and it's a 4-year stint. These are guys you were in kindergarten with, and you get to play. And that's what it's such a unique. Such a unique journey. So you coached, I know you were in Iowa. Where were you at the end of?
I coached actually 42 years of high school basketball.
Okay.
And, I was at 4 different schools. One of them was my alma mater for 28 years, which I thought would never, ever happen. I didn't want to go back to my alma mater to begin with, but you know, things change. And, I had a great, really great career there. We had some tremendous teams, some state tournament teams and championships and all that. And then I ended up at Iowa City High the last several years, the last 4 years of my coaching career. And that was a really good, great experience because it was a school that was fabulous tradition of athletics, but their boys basketball program was not very good at all. And I think they wanted somebody with a little more gray hair to come in and kind of change that culture around. A very diverse school. So that was a great experience. I loved every minute of that. We really, 4 years we had to change the youth programs. We had to, you know, I tell that story all the time with my, when I'm on the circuit with USA Basketball talking about youth programs, is that if your youth programs aren't very good in your high school, you're not going to be very good at the high school level. So our youth programs, we changed that completely around and got things going there. And it really helped our high school program out. So that was after 42 years. I had done some work with USA Basketball before that, but this job opened up then on a full-time basis. And it was just a really good timing for me to step away from high school after 42 years and take this position.
I think a lot of people listening too, it's like, so I know the program I took over had like 5 winning seasons in 30 years. And the first thing we did was the youth program, because that's your foundation. I refer to it as like your minor leagues. It's your AAA. It's your, you know, and you got to put, and it's like starting a business. You're not going to be McDonald's overnight. It's going to take time to develop the brand. It's going to take time for kids to play. I worry a couple things that we're in a society right now where we want things to happen fast, and it's not going to necessarily always happen fast. I'm not always sure that that people are patient enough too. It takes time. It definitely takes time. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about USA Basketball, because I think what you're doing with USA Basketball is exactly what USA Basketball needed. I'm so excited for our country and what you're doing, in the sense that I think it's AAU and some of those things maybe got a little bit out of hand. And I think USA Basketball and youth division and all that stuff and the clinics you guys are running all over the country are exactly what our country needs. But if you could talk about that a little bit more, that'd be great.
3 years ago, actually longer than that, USA Basketball is kind of an umbrella over the NCAA, the NBA, the AAU, the National Junior College High School Association. So not that we govern anything, but we're just kind of they're part of us. And so probably 10 years ago, NCAA and the NBA came up with the iHoops. I don't know if you remember iHoops.
I do.
Yeah, that was kind of the first initiative to really start the process of youth basketball transition in the country. Well, they put a lot of money into it, but there wasn't really enough initiative behind it to make much of a difference. Right. So after 5 years, the NCAA and the NBA came to USA Basketball and said, take over youth basketball. We think that's the best thing for what's going on in the country. So three and a half years ago, we started our youth division with USA Basketball. Previously, everybody knows about the national team division.
Right.
With the old team
and Coach K, what Coach K has done and all that stuff. Yes.
Yeah. And then I actually coached the U16 and U17 national team, which is our younger team. But
what basketball has given you is unbelievable. The number of times you've gotten gold medals. Now it's U16 and U17, right? You've traveled all over the world, probably.
Yeah. Right. I've been very fortunate to be able to coach those elite players before they get to the NBA. Now many of them are in the NBA and number one draft picks, all that.
Right.
That's a completely different division than what we're in. So our youth division, and now Jay Demings is our director of our youth division, has a great vision. And so in that process, I'll throw in this, is that, you know, we're starting after about 40 years of sometimes bad basketball. You know, we're not starting from ground level. You know, like soccer comes in our country, and they can start from ground zero.
Right.
There isn't. Really wasn't soccer here before,
right?
Which a lot of our other sports. So we're starting 40 years into it,
right?
And so one of the main things is that we now have a basketball USA basketball license, which coaches have to get if they're coaching in the live period, which is live period means if college coaches can come to a tournament, and watch players play like in the Nike, Under Armour, Adidas circuit, then those coaches that coach those teams have to have a USA Basketball license. Previously, it used to be with NCAA. That was all turned over to us. So the license procedure has really been big for us. We have about 25,000 to 30,000 coaches now that are licensed, which includes a background check, a safe sport thing. The background check's updated every 30 days. By the way, so that's really a big thing.
No, I didn't know that. So yeah, so I you can count me in that list because I'm coaching my son's AAU team. So it's great. It's a great program. Yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah. And then part of that initiative then was we put on academies around the country where coaches can come to a live academy and a clinic. We call it academies, but they're actually clinics where I bring in speakers. They speak at the clinics, such as, you know, Jay Wright comes in. You know, Popovich will come in and speak. Brad Stevens, a lot of Division I coaches. We have high school coaches that speak at it, youth coaches. So we gear it toward coaches that need their license. They'll come and get their license. And so after that academy's over with, then they can plug in and get their background check and receive a license. So that's been a really big initiative for us as well. We just had one in L.A. this past weekend. We had one in Boston, New York coming up in May. And then throughout the fall. So those have been huge. We have regional camps going on around the country that where we'll go in for a weekend. And part of it is we also develop coaches, how to coach young kids. You know, there's too many coaches that have played at maybe at a high level, or too many coaches who are dads really don't know how to coach an 8-year-old team or 9-year-old. So we go through the process of, you know, here's the best way to develop, organize that young youth team to get the skills. And we want kids to stay in the game. We want kids to love the game. We want to give them a safe environment. So that's been our initiative at the youth level.
So I've taught for, I'm a math teacher, so I've taught for, you know, 30 plus years. It's the same principle in the sense that you have to, you know, you have to teach them the basics before they can, you know, do the calculus.
Right. And our curriculum, coaches that have our license can go online and look at our curriculum, and our curriculum based is a progressive coaching level. So, you know, we have four different levels we have in our curriculum. We have the introductory level for very young players, the foundational level for junior high age type players. We have then the advanced, which is more the high school player, and then the performance level, which is the good high school, maybe more elite team, and then the college level. So in our curriculum, coaches can go on that and look at, all right, I'm coaching a seven-year-old team. Here's the introductory level. Here's the drills that should be done at that introductory level. Here's how we should coach those kids. So it's a progressive type of teaching as opposed to, you know, let's roll out the ball at 8-year-olds and start playing 5-on-5, which right. They have no clue what's going on. In fact, we really discourage that level playing 5-on-5 a lot. We love our 3-on-3 type of thing. So that's our curriculum in kind of in a nutshell, but that's been really a popular thing for us. We have coaches that are calling with a lot of questions about, you know, how do I develop the curriculum in my team and those kind of things. So you can go on, click on a drill, and we'll show it on the screen. And it's really a progressive type of thing where you start with the footwork and then you move up. And that's been one of our signature things, I think, is our curriculum to go along with that license.
Right. And I going back to what you're saying, I think the game is really to be taught 3-on-3 is perfect, even especially at the younger ages.
Absolutely.
I just think that's the way the game should be taught at the younger ages.
You know, even, you know, we right now we have a FIBA, which is the governing body, international governing body, has a 3-on-3 initiative. And so we actually have a national 3-on-3 tournament for under 18s and open division. And we're looking that it's going to be probably a Olympic sport in Japan in 2020. If it's not a sport, it'll certainly be a demonstration sport. It's a very fast paced game. We actually have tournaments around the country, 3-on-3 tournaments. And then they send the winners to Colorado Springs for the national tournament. But 3-on-3 is a tremendous way to teach the game. Kids learn how to play out of 3-on-3 as opposed to 5-on-5, especially the young age. We think that's really a
I even do that in my tryouts some, because the thing is you can't hide 3-on-3. You know, you can hide a little bit 5-on-5 and not touch the ball and not have to defend and not have to do those things. And when you're playing 3-on-3, you can't hop.
Defensively or offensively. It teaches you how to play the game much more effectively in a 3-on-3 type of situation than it does a 5-on-5.
Right. I think
it does. Again, that's part of – you made a good point, because that's part of a progressive teaching. Start with that 3-on-3 type of thing as far as movement, cutting, and then you build up to your 4-on-4, 5-on-5 type of things.
And I think you're right. I mean – A lot of coaches are, you know, they're dads and they played, and, you know, they think back to when they played. Well, the way you played, first of all, it's probably changed. Second of all, what you remember is when you were older, not when you were 9 years old. And
right.
You know, they're trying to put in three different offenses and do two. It's like they got to be able to dribble the ball. They got to be able to pass the ball, you know, all those kind of things. Before you get to the difficult stuff. And sometimes I think they jump the steps. And that's what I think it's great what you're doing is, like, you know, you're breaking it down. Here's the steps. Here's what you need to do at a younger age. Because that's how you're going to become a better player. Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. A couple things. First of all, we would love if you would leave a review, subscribe, and like. Those are nice. We'd also love if you came over and joined teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. I promise you'll probably get an email from me in a video welcoming you within 24 hours. Also, if you're wanting to help us with hosting fees and those things, and it doesn't cost anything, you can go down below and hit our affiliate link for Amazon. Every time you go shopping on Amazon, we'll get a small little commission. So that's really easy to do. Also, make sure, and I don't mention this a lot, make sure you go over and check out our YouTube channel, Teach Hoops. There's thousands of videos over there to kind of help you become a better basketball coach. All right, let's head back to the podcast.
All right, some questions. So if you could only do three things at practice, what would they be? If you could only coach three things at a practice, what would they be?
Yeah, I get that question asked a lot of times. First of all, it'd be spend some time with footwork. Pivoting, just simple footwork drills, Bibbing, you know, you watch really good players and they have great footwork.
Right.
Whether it's around the basket, whether it's out on the court, but their footwork is elite players like LeBron James or Steph Curry have really, really good footwork. So we'd spend a lot of time in practice. We do spend a lot of time in practice, even with our U16 team on pivoting drills, dribble pivot, front pivots, reverse pivots, understanding, you know, how to get out of traps with the pivots, those kind of things. So I think footwork is huge. I worked Coach John Wooden's camps for many, many years. And, you know, he was the epitome of footwork and balance. He always talked about balance and footwork. And so as a young player, especially 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, I think that's really important in a practice.
Right.
It's still important as you get older, too, but I think that's where you initiate that footwork type of drills and show them how that can be effective in their game. And then the second thing I think you need to spend a lot of time on is passing and receiving. You know, the best teams are the best passing teams. They pass the ball well, pass off the move. They can pass. They can catch the ball off the move. And so young players need to spend a lot of time with the passing and receiving. And not just, you know, not just two-handed chest passes. We're talking passing off the move. We're talking push passes, step out passes around defense. So teach them how to angles to pass, all those kind of things, I think is really important. And then the third thing I think you teach, obviously, is shooting. I think realistically, you look at all levels and we're looking at our U16 team coming up. And right now, you know, I kind of go out on the circuits and look for players, and there are very few what I would call outstanding shooters. We have a lot of scorers who can kind of get to the basket and have a good mid-range game, but just flat out shooting. You know, the first team I had was Brad Beal, and Brad Beal could—he was a shooter. He could really stroke it.
Right.
But you just don't find those as much anymore.
And why do you think that is? I have a theory on this. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, because I had a chance to visit with Steph Curry a couple years ago during the national team workouts. And you know, I asked him that. I said, you know, why do you think there's just not more better shooters in the league and coming up? And his answer was interesting. He said he thinks kids just get bored shooting. They're not putting enough time at it. You know, it's just kind of like, well, go on, shoot 10 shots, and I want to move on to something else. So sometimes I think they have to really kind of overcome the one-ons just by themselves shooting the basketball to get better. And he just didn't feel that young players or players spent enough time on it they got bored with shooting the basketball more than they did. You know, they wanted to play games as opposed to just go out and shoot. So I thought that was an interesting answer. Yeah, I think a lot of it too is at a young age, you need to the proper form technique, and then they can develop on that.
I know. I mean, there's a couple of things. First of all, I think probably kids at the younger ages are playing too many games. They're not working on their skills.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I had, that would be my thing. But anyway, I didn't let my son shoot. He's a freshman now. I didn't let him shoot a three-pointer until he was in seventh grade because he wasn't strong enough. So, I'm still going to have to tweak it some, but, you know, and part of shooting, I tell kids in our program, and when I go and talk, it's like shooting is like lifting weights. If you want to get strong, you have to lift weights. If you want to become a shooter, you have to shoot. If you want to become a shooter, you have to shoot. And then everybody can become a shooter. You don't necessarily become a scorer, but everybody, if you put in the shots, it's a math teacher in me. If you put enough shots up, it's muscle memory, you'll be a shooter. You might not be able to score because you might not be able to dribble or attack or do those things. You'll be able to shoot the ball if you put enough shots in. Form allows you to take maybe less shots. If your form is horrible, like, I don't know, you can think of any guys, you're old enough, Jamal Wilkes had that weird form for the
right. Yeah.
But he shot so many shots, he could still hit it. He probably had to shoot more than the average person. So it's the math teacher in me. But it's like, you're right. I mean, I think there's two things. I think when we were kids, we went outside and played more.
Yep.
And that's the way I relaxed. I went outside and I shot baskets when I was a kid.
Yep.
You know, that's how I relaxed. That's how I kind of,
But, and I think I love that you said passing. I think passing is a lost art.
Yeah, it is.
The great players can pass the ball.
Yeah.
And they have a knack for it.
You made a great point, Steve, about kids playing too many games.
Yeah.
what happens is, and there's nothing wrong with playing some games, but when you think you're going to get better by playing games, I think you don't have the proper attitude about as far as skill development.
Right.
You talk about a shooter during a game, may take 10 shots.
Right.
Unless you're one of the guys who has the green light to shoot every time. But, if you take 10 shots during a game, you're only taking, 50 or 60 shots, and you're not going to get better.
No.
So you have to spend time outside of that game process on your skill development. And sometimes I think that's a little bit lost. I know there's a lot of guys that are skill development trainers or whatever. They have all these different drills, but flat out shooting the basketball is really important, and getting up repetitions. And there's really two parts to the shooting part. You shoot from the waist up is all your form right. Shoot. Your elbow in, your follow through, those kind of things. And then from the waist down is your footwork. That's how you learn how to score. So you have to spend time on your technique, because that carries over to your game situation. Because in a game, you're not going to think about, let's say I got my elbow in and I'm following through and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's going to become, like you said, a muscle memory reflex. So you've done it enough that in a game situation, then you become, the only thing you're thinking about is making a shot. You're not thinking about your form.
Right.
Shooting is a complicated skill from the standpoint that there are a lot of moving parts to it.
It's like a golf swing. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my golf swing needs a lot of work too. But.
You know what? I always tell people, I used to fish, I used to hunt, I used to golf, and then I became a basketball coach. So those things go away, because you can't do both. Yeah.
No, you cannot.
You cannot do both. And this goes back to all these kids. So, I've had my fair share of Division I players, NBA guys, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't matter. The thing is, so this year in Wisconsin, we had 5,000 high school starting spots or seniors, 5,000 seniors, I think it was, I read, and we had 20 Division I scholarships. So all these kids going out in the April open window and the July open window, it's great. Don't get me wrong. My son does it. But
yep.
Scholarships, it's like 0.00 some percent that are getting the scholarships. You got to work on your skill set if you want to play at any level. Sometimes I think everyone's chasing that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And it's like, well, first of all, don't forget about the journey. This is about playing with your friends and having fun and working on skills. I think sometimes this AAU and the summer stuff and all this circuit it gets overwhelming. I think it does for the kids.
Yeah. And I think it gets overwhelming for the parents as well. I think the parents are chasing a dream that maybe the kid doesn't have.
Right.
Unfortunately, we see that a lot with a lot of our youth elite players with U16 is that, the parents are chasing that dream, and it may not be the dream that the player has. Most kids are playing, we find out, and we know this for a fact, that kids play, the number one reason they play basketball is for fun.
Right.
And it's not because they're trying to get a college scholarship, although that might be the end result of it, but they're playing for fun. Basketball is a fun game to play.
Right.
And the adults, we take the coaches, whatever, take the fun out of it.
Right.
I always tell at our academy, somebody instilled the love of a game to us.
Right.
I look back at my career, and my high school coach was, my dad was very hands off, but he certainly allowed me to develop my love of the game. And then I had some great coaches. So I'm saying, if a 7-year-old comes out and his coach yells at him for every mistake he makes and is a negative, he's going to hate basketball.
Right. He's not going to play it when he's 10.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And it's a great,
every day in my class, I talk about a life lesson, and the life lesson for basketball is it's not about the game's great. Don't get me wrong. I coach volleyball. There's nothing like basketball. It's a fast moving, you know, coaches are involved you don't have all this time between pitches like you do in baseball. It's a great sport, but what it teaches you about life and being a teammate and being part of something bigger than you and all the life lessons that you learn, that's why I do it. It's those faces. It's the fun that you see every day. So going back to some questions, if you go back to yourself as a younger coach, what would you say to yourself?
I just, again, great question. Cause I just had, another guy wanted me to write an article on what I would do as a younger coach. Well, I think first of all, I look back on that. I spent a lot of time going to clinics and really trying to improve my craft.
Yeah.
And I think coaches today just don't do that. There's nothing wrong with going to YouTube and seeing drills, but you need that. I got to where I was today because I went, met people, networked at clinics and at camps. And I think that's been lost with our young coaches.
I do too. And interrupt for a second. I think the thing about those clinics is it's great. It's all that stuff you learn. I'd go listen to you and I'd pick up a couple things that I'm going to add. I'm not going to pick up 80 things. I'm going to pick up a couple things.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. We really appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to me and the interviews and all that. If you do like these, we've been putting them on for 3 or 4 years. If you like them, we would ask you to subscribe and leave a review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, or just send me an email. I'd love to hear from you, steve@ttubes.com. When you're there, maybe come over and check out ttubes.com for coaches who want to get better. Videos, audio, community, one-on-one calls, office hours. So just got off a call with a ttubes.com member. We broke some film down for him. So go over and check that out, and we really appreciate that. And if you have time, go over and check out High School Hoops and Teacher Side Gig. Those are other podcasts under the Coach Market media conglomerate, I will call it. So go over and check those out. Let's head back to the podcast.
It's right. The interaction with the coaches that I'm sitting next to. It's interaction with my staff. It's all of that stuff where, okay, we see stuff, and then we come back and go, hey, we should think about this. And that's where you get the piece of paper out or the whiteboard and you start doing it, or you're talking to another coach in the hotel, and it's all that networking. It's all those interactions, I think, that make you think about your craft.
No question. And I really doubt whether I'd have been part of USA Basketball had I not done those things as a young coach, because a lot of those people I met along the way were people that went on to do other things and then gave me an opportunity. So, I think as a young coach, that would be one of my recommendations. Although I think I probably did that as a young coach. Some of the things I think else that would enter into, I think I would spend probably as a high school coach, I would spend more time on special situations, out of bounds plays, last second shots. As a young coach, I didn't probably do that enough. I think that's one of the things I would spend more time on. I'd also spend probably more time on, I think I did a good job of it, but not a great job as a young coach. I think I might did a much better job as I coach is really develop a relationship, a bonding with your team players, whether it be, they got to see the coach off the court as somebody who is, we're different people. When we go off the court, we're coaches on the court, but when we go off the court, we're probably different people. And I think players need to see the coach in a kind of different lights. You go bowling with them, you take them to ball games, you take your do a lot of stuff with your teams. I think that really develops a tremendous bond, and then they're much more coachable. They allow you to coach them probably in a much better way. Right. I did some of that as a young coach. I didn't realize how important that was until I got to be an old coach that coached quite a few years. So I think
probably your USA Basketball showed that. And there's a couple things I do with my program. Part of the reason our winning percentage from January on is so good because
we always go on a trip. We always go somewhere. Like last year we went to Florida. We always go on a trip, and that's kind of our retreat where they can kind of see me in a different light. But the off season part, it's crazy. Like I would say, and again, as an older coach, about 7 years ago, I stopped coaching them in the summer. Yeah. I let my assistants do it. I let everyone else do it because that's my time to build relationships with them. That's for that for them to see me in it, like you said, in a totally different light. So that when we got to go to battle, that they, you know, we're all in the same foxhole, basically.
I like that. I mean, I think that's a great point. So I would probably also, you know, later on in my career, I used to make home visits. I made home visits with our players. Because I wanted to see them and I wanted to see their parents in their home.
That's great.
Put them in their turf a little bit, kind of so they could understand where I'm coming from. And so by doing that, we get a lot better buy-in from the parents. They would kind of understand a little more what we were doing. I wouldn't do it every year because we have, you know, the same kids that I bought every other year.
Right.
So, you know, too many – young coaches are fearful of talking to parents or getting involved, and in some cases, rightfully so. But by the same token, as you know, we can't as coaches, we have to. They're part of our program. We have to embrace the parents in a program, and they're not always going to agree with us. We're not going to agree with them, but I think we have to make some initial steps to get them involved with what we're doing and buy into our program. You know, if you have a complete buy-in. Which I think is getting harder and harder to do at the high school level. You have to have the buy-in from the players, which sometimes is a little bit easier than the parents. But if you have the buy-in from the parents and the players, you got a special team, and you can really do a lot of things.
You do. I think. Yeah. I mean, we're all part of that community. If everyone's on the same, I can go back to all my great teams when everyone's on the same page, it's special.
Yeah.
Special.
It really is. So I think as a young coach, I would have probably reached out a little more, you know, to parents and not say that they're, you know, include them as opposed to exclude them. I think that's really a valuable thing as I learned, as I went on in my coaching career.
Okay, so if you could describe your like coaching philosophy in a paragraph, how would you do that?
Well, you're asking some tough questions here, Steve.
Sorry,
it's all right. You know, I think my coaching philosophy is built on relationships first, and then I think it's built on teaching the game as opposed to. So I think one of my phrases is basketball is overcoached and undertaught. And sometimes I
say that again. I love that. Say that again.
Basketball is overcoached and undertaught.
It is.
So I think as coaches, we think we're coaching a lot, but we're not really teaching the game. You know, we have all these sets that we're going to run and all the, you know, the fancy things that we try and do, but we're really not teaching the game well enough to perform at a high level. So I think, you know, that's philosophy wise, I'm really, I think that's one of the things I never really got into the college game is because once you get in the college game, you know, you have to recruit, you have to do everything else, but you don't really get to teach the game. And I love to be on the court teaching the game of basketball.
And I think Bobby Knight said that first, we're all teachers first.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if you're a good coach, you're a teacher first.
Yeah.
You have to teach.
John Wooden said that.
Yeah.
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 So
yeah.
You have to. So, if you could, all right, next one. So if you could talk to one coach for 1 hour, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Well, I'll go back to working John Wooden's camps for over 20 years. You know, we had great conversations with Coach Wooden. You know, and we came to be really, really good friends and real close friends over those 20-year period. But we would talk about everything from, you know, how to run a practice to how to, you know, work with your best player, how to motivate players. So, you know, he was really my mentor as I got through the first 10 years of my coaching on to the end. He was probably really my mentor as far as the way I did things and the way I conducted myself on and off the court. He had a huge influence on me. And I think a lot of other people are, you know, and you raise a great question, because I think young coaches, you better have a mentor.
Yep.
You better have a mentor, even older coaches. You know, who is really your mentor that you can not necessarily pattern yourself off of, but that you can look to and ask questions and they've been through it. And
right.
Your mentor has been through the things before, so they're going to give you some good information. And I don't see that as much now, where coaches don't have as many. Doesn't seem like they have a mentor that they can really lean on for things.
Right. It's your circle. It's your circle of trust. It's your guys that you can, hey, come watch me practice, or just come watch my game and tell me what you see. You know, I've had great mentors. I mean, it's the same in the classroom. If you have someone, hey, I tried this today and it didn't work. It's the same principle. It's like, I tried this offense and it obviously didn't work.
Yeah.
It's the same.
I think you made one really good, the word trust, when you said that really, to me, that's the most important. I call it standards. We have some standards that we go by. We don't have rules. We have standards that we try to pull. And when you said the word trust, I think that, you trust people to help you out, and you trust your teammates, and that trust factor goes a long way in helping you become a better coach. And, it's like anything else. Your players have to be coachable. The coach has to be coachable. You know,
right.
I'm gonna open myself up a little bit to another coach giving me some information. You know, I have to be coachable with it. It's not, because if we stop learning, then we're done.
We're done. When I don't want to walk into that gym, or I'm not as excited as I was when I was 25, I'm done. And then when I don't want to learn, I'm done. You know, that's so do you have any superstitions?
Oh, I don't know if I'd call them superstitions, but yes.
Okay.
I think as coaches, we all kind of have, the way we do things. It's kind of super. I kind of just refer to it as I don't want to take chances, so I'm going to do it this way every time.
and I tell my boys, it's like, I have tons of superstitions. I go, it's not about the superstition. It's about the routine. It's like your free throw routine. The superstition is about me wearing my suit for the game or a tie for the, that's just my routine. It's a superstition. Yes. If I don't do it, we're not going to lose because of that. But it's the mental superstition. It's the routine that you're getting yourself into to prepare, basically.
I think part of that's under the term of culture.
Culture.
This here's how you do things off the court. It's kind of part of your culture of your team.
Yep, and the culture of your program. I mean, I think that's a huge part of it. Is that culture that you build, from the youth level up. Okay, if you could do one offense and one defense for a game, what would it be and why?
Are you talking high school level or?
Yeah, let's do high school level.
One thing I like about coaching USA basketball is we do FIBA rules, which are 24-second shot clock. So the timeouts are a little different because players can't call timeouts. You got to call them from the bench and not a live ball. I always said those two rules made me a better coach. I'd have my team better prepared. Because you can't run the clock down to 10 seconds and have your point guard call a timeout instead of a play.
Right.
So you had to be very, very conscious of, having your team prepared. So in situations, they're going to have to be able to do it on the court themselves. And many times you'll hear me say in practice, sometimes you just have to figure it out. That's part of the over coach and under top type of thing, where sometimes we try and coach everything. And I still see that a lot, AU level, the travel team level, the high school level, where they're trying to coach every play. You can't coach every play.
No.
Let your players teach it and let your players play.
It's like a symphony. What I tell people, coaching is like a symphony. And sometimes, you need to, change the first chair. But, there's a rhythm to it. And if you don't let them, when you don't lose. And going back to one thing you said earlier about working on situations and stuff. Again, that's something I didn't do as a young coach for everyone that's listening. And then about, I don't know, probably my fifth year, I started, we probably lost a close game or something. I have a stack of note cards about 4 inches long. And every time I was sitting somewhere, I would think of a situation. I put it in that pile. I still have it. I still have it somewhere. It's probably in my coaching bag. But, and then we'd come to practice and I'd tell my assistant, hey, go grab 4 note cards. I don't care what they are. And we'd go, all right, here's the situation. And it's just an easy way to kind of throw it in. The kids love it because it's kind of
great, like, way to do it.
Yeah.
Great way to do it. Yeah.
Because you got to prepare yourself too. It's more about me. Like, I got to be in that situation too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I laugh when I watch TV games and they show a coach a timeout. You know, he's drawn up a play and the announcer says, oh, this is a play he's drawn up. He's going on the court. They ran that play. Well, don't kid yourself. They run that play 100 times in practice. It's not like you just, you know, it's not like they just,
right.
just Coach, drew it up.
Coach Ryan was great at that. I watched so many Coach Ryan practices, and his last 30 minutes were situational. It's like, and what I took away is, like, I tell you, you know, we'd have something like a quick hit or a situation game and something at the end of the game, we'd call it like win or something like that. And I'd call it out. They would know exactly what to do. Me diagramming it is just reinforcing it. It's,
You raised another good point is young coaches. I think you asked what I would do more of or change as a young coach. You know, terminology is huge.
Yeah.
And so you talked about, all right, we're going to run wind. So now everybody knows what that is.
Right.
You know, and I don't think I did that very well later on, and even coaching the international game I had. But, you know, you have your terms, you know, the blast, the, you know, whatever it is.
Right. Yep. You know, and I love PGC. I think PGC runs great basketball camps. And I think there's some great books out there. You know, Stuff Players Should Know is a great one.
Yeah.
I talk about breaking windows, you know, when you get troubled, you know, there's, where are you going to pass the ball? I mean, it's just, it's what you have to come up with your terminology and then transfer it to the student athlete. If you want them to learn it, you know, my guys will know what I say when I say break a window, they know.
Yeah, right.
I got a fake above the ear and then I'm going off the hip, or I'm going off the faking off the hip and going off the other ear. They know what I mean because we've already taught that. So I think that's,
Yeah,
that's a great thing for all the coaches that are listening. You know, come up with that, those, and it's not like 80 terms, it's 15, you know.
Right, yeah.
That everyone can.
It's really important, I think, and that makes your kid, and that's part of teaching the game, you know. I think as you develop those terms that the kids know, because a lot of kids don't know, you know, terminology or,
right.
You know, you have to make them understand what your terminology is.
Yeah. So what do you think has been the biggest change in basketball in the last 15, 20 years?
Well, obviously the 3-point line has been huge. You know, some of the rule changes have been huge for basketball, the 3-point line. I think that's changed the game tremendously. And by the way, you're from Wisconsin, you'd appreciate this, but your neighboring state of Iowa was the first high school, the first state in the country to put in a 3-point line.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think that's been, you know, those rule changes. You know, I wish we'd go, I wish high school would have the shot clock. I think it's
it's common, I think. I think it's common.
I do too. I think it's really, you know, when I go watch games without a shot clock, the flow isn't quite there.
I think there's several issues, but I think money is definitely an issue. And I think getting someone to run it's not an easy thing to run.
You can't have it, you know, you can't have a junior seventh grader try to run a shot clock during varsity.
And the thing is, you can't put the shot clock in the corner on the floor where grandma's going to stand in front of it either. It's got to be mounted.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of issues with that, but hopefully I think that's one of the things that at least the high school level, I'm not saying it needs to be at,
right.
You know, your youth level, but at least the high school level. So that, I think those rules have obviously been a game changer. I think also what's affected the game a lot is the social media that kids are on.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to get away from it.
Nope.
You know, and that's going to be part of it. So I think, again, coaches have to kind of embrace that aspect.
I think that's a great point. And I've talked to a lot of coaches and no one's about, this is again, one of my secret sauces is my brother told me this. He says, cause he has older kids that are older than me. He says, you can fight it or you can learn it and understand it. And, you know, I the last time I called one of my players to tell him something, you know, kind of, I text them, I remind them, I tweet them, I do something to get their attention because that's where they are. And then when we can see face, when we need to talk face to face, obviously in school or practice, we can. But we have to be, you know, people used to go to school in horse and buggies. Things change, you know. So we can fight it or we can join it, kind of thing.
Exactly. It's going to be here regardless, so we better join it.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere, you know. I was an interesting side, nothing to do with basketball, but my son's 15 and he's starting to do his driver's ed, and I turned to him as I'm driving him yesterday. I said, Drew, you might be the last generation to go get their driver's license, you know, as a rite of passage. And he goes, what do you mean, Dad? I go, well, with all the driverless cars and stuff, you guys might be the last generation that this is a big deal. You know, in 20 years, people might not be driving cars. Maybe I'm a little fast, but eventually that's going to happen where the rite of passage of getting a driver's license is not going to be there. It was an interesting conversation. So rapid fire, let's do some rapid fire questions. What's your favorite basketball?
Favorite basketball team?
Favorite basketball, like basketball, physical basketball that you put in a hoop, like Spalding, Wilson, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, okay. You know, I would say Spalding.
Okay. I like the international balls because it's got that line on it. And you can tell if the rotation's right. You know,
and Moulton makes those. Moulton doesn't make any basketballs other than international, I think.
They're right.
In volleyballs, but those give a very good feel, a shooter's feel. I think our kids, you get used to it a little bit, and they like the international basketball because of this. The small panels that are weaved into it,
right, and it's that line too is so helpful. But they make good volleyballs too. Let me tell you, from a volleyball coach. One word to describe your ideal player?
Passion.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, heart, passion. I love that. If you could go to one sporting event in the world, if I could buy you a ticket to one sporting event in the world, what would it be?
Game 7 of an NBA final.
Ooh. No one has said that. And you know what? No one has said the Masters either. I thought somebody would have said the Masters, but that's a good one.
Yeah.
What's your favorite pregame meal?
Probably my favorite pregame meal would be, I love steak.
Okay. So a good steak.
Good steak, yeah. And post-game meal too.
Yeah. What I tell people is that my favorite pregame meal is sitting down with having a steak and sitting with my staff and just talking.
Yeah.
Nothing better. Nothing better, just talking basketball. Well, it's one thing you do to relax.
I do like to, I obviously watch sporting events, just kind of come home, chill out, watch a sporting event, whether it be golf. I like to watch golf. I don't play that much, but college football. I love college football. I think that's probably what I do to chill out. I try and read a good book. So I'm always into a book. Whether I it might take me a month to finish it, but I'm always trying to get into a decent book. So.
Hey, what I have found too, and this is not a plug for Audible, but what I have found is two things: as I get older, I fall asleep more when I'm reading.
Yep.
and I'm so busy that when I'm traveling, that's when I can do my, you know, I do the Audible book, so at least I can listen to it. You know, you don't necessarily have to sit down and find that time to read it. You know, maybe if I'm out for a walk or I'm running or I'm traveling, I can do that. This is going to be a really hard one, the next one. The best player you have seen in person.
Best player I've seen in person. Well, I mean, I go back to Larry Bird. I would say he's probably the best player I've seen in person. You know, I've never worked with him, but I saw him in person, play several games. And, you know, we always have bucket lists. So one of my bucket lists was to see the old Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics play in the old Garden
versus the Lakers. Yeah,
yeah. Well, it's 100 degrees outside, and so I'd say Larry Bird is probably one of my favorites that I've seen play.
Okay, and then who do you think the best player of all time is?
Say that again.
Who do you think the best player of all time is? Not necessarily who you've seen.
Yeah, boy. I mean, you know, you got to go to Jordan.
Yeah.
To start with, he could do so many things so well. You know, and I think as he, you know, as he aged, he got better. You know, he was not a great player in high school. He was a good, very good player, and probably more toward the elite end. But he was not. He made himself a great player as his career went on.
Right.
He never rested his laurels. He was one of those guys who, and I've had the opportunity to, you know, work with him some. And
you know, with the exception of LeBron, you look at even Steph Curry, you look at Westbrook, you look at these guys, they were not, you know, the number one ranked kid when they were out, and they worked. It's a prime example for people listening.
Yeah, you know, Steph Curry wasn't even hardly recruited.
Right.
You know, Bob McKelvin Davison gave him a scholarship, and that's a great story. You know, another really good story. We had LeBron out here at our festival. We used to have a run of festivals before we started national teams, North, South, East, West festivals. And after LeBron's sophomore year, he was really under the radar. He wasn't very much a name at that time. And one of the coaches that coached in Ohio said, "You know what? We got a kid out here that's pretty darn good as a sophomore. We think we should invite him out to our festival as a junior." And it was LeBron James. He was pretty good.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good. We did talk.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best game you have seen in person?
The best game I've seen in person?
Yes.
Probably Villanova's win at the Final Four.
Oh, really? In 80? Yeah. What would that have been? 80?
No, that had been this past Madness game. That's one I kind of keep going back to. I think that's probably better than some of the – I mean, I've seen a lot of really good games, but that might be the best.
What's one book you'd recommend someone read?
Jay Billis's Toughness.
Yeah, I love that book.
I love that book. Yeah, he's got great examples. In fact, we had our team read that book. I got that book for our team a couple years ago on our team. We read the book, and then we did some team stuff from that book as well. So it was a good, really good learning experience.
Well, thank you for being on in this early morning with me, Coach. I really appreciate it.
It's awesome. I love talking basketball, and we're kind of all, you know, us basketball junkies. we could talk it forever. I love talking the game and just getting other viewpoints. And I think you had some great points about improving the games. And I think we throw ideas out at each other. I think that's what basketball is about as well.
It is. Well, thank you for being on. I really do appreciate it. And thank you for what you're doing for our country and for youth basketball. You know, we appreciate it. And I think it's going to help not only the kids in basketball, but in life. So we really appreciate that. Thank you, Coach.
Hey, Coach, I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, make sure you leave a review. We really do love those written reviews. Those 5-star ones are the best. The 1-stars, you can forget to do it. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Not only is it resources and handouts and videos, it's a little bit of everything for a coach that wants to get better. So go over and check it out. Also, down below, click our Amazon link, and that helps us with our hosting fees. I think the little things that come up with running a podcast. Sports Social Podcast Network.